I thought that Korach was a great exemplar for what not to do in the case of particular friendships, of seeing something through. So there's a Mishnah that talks about Korach, which is a fascinating Mishnah. If you look at it, there's really a lot of lessons. There's going to be three lessons that we're going to see from this particular Mishnah. The third one, we're not going to spend so much time on the first two, and I think that there's a lot of stuff that we could glean from here in terms of relationships, in particular in marriage. So the Mishnah states, Kol machlokas shehid l'shem shamayim, any machlokas that's for the sake of heaven. Sofel is kayim, it's going to last forever. V'sheinu l'shem shamayim, if it's not l'shem shamayim, ain't sofel is kayim, it's not going to last. Ezu machlokas l'shem shamayim, what's the machlokas that's l'shem shamayim? Zu machlokas hill v'shamayim, that's the machlokas hill versus shamayim, which aren't so many machlokas, all the machlokas are based hill v'shamayim, I think hill versus shamayim is only three. V'sheinu l'shem shamayim, what's the machlokas that's not l'shem shamayim? Zu machlokas, this is the machlokas of Korach v'adot, of Korach and his henchmen or his cronies. So there are a couple of obvious problems with this particular Mishnah. We'll begin with the first one. And that is, the Mishnah begins and says, Kol machlokas that's for the sake of heaven will stay forever. So that's a funny, you know, funny thing. You say, oh, it's great. If L'shem Shemayim, then the machlokas will last forever. But we would think that if it's L'shem Shemayim, the machlokas will be resolved, we move on. And so on and so forth. But yet, the Mishnah tells us, Kol machlokas shehid l'shem shamayim sofel is kayim. I remember once hearing from one of my neighbors, Rabbi Kamenetsky, Matzik Mordechai Kamenetsky, not Yisrael, he was telling over a story that when he was a young rabbi in Pittsburgh, he was there, and the first Shabbos he was there was the Shabbos after Pesach, right? That month. So the shul gets up to, gets finished with planning, and they're about to return to Sefer Torah, and all of a sudden, one guy yells out, Avarachamim. And another guy yells, shh, what are you talking about? Shabbos Mevarachim. Another guy yells out, Avarachamim. It's Rosh Chodesh here. It's the middle of Sira. Of course we say Avarachim. Another guy yells out, no, it's Shabbos Mevarachim. And they're going back and forth. And they look at the young Rav, and they say, Aznu, what should we do? So he looks at them, and he says, well, we should do what we did last year. Whatever you guys did last year, we should do this year. They look at him and say, this is exactly what we did last year. We yelled, should we say it, should we not say it, should we say it? And it was a back and a forth and a give and a take. So, I mean, is that what you really want? A machlokas l'shem shamayim should last forever, seemingly, is something that we don't want. So, the Bar Tanura says something that is fascinating, and we'll get into what John Gottman says about marriage. The Bar Tanura says, we're focusing on the wrong thing. And again, I'm not so sure it works with the language, but the Bar Tanura says, to whom I disagree, he says that if it's a machlokas l'shem shamayim, sofel is kayim. Who is the sofel is kayim that we're talking about? Hillel and Shammai. The people, the litigants, the disputants. If both Hillel and Shammai, who are our paradigms for what is machlokas l'shem shamayim, if they're both for the sake of heaven, then the names of Hillel and Shammai are going to last forever. But if they're not l'shem shamayim, who is that? That's like Korach l'adaso. Then the legacy of Korach is going to be tarnished forever. And that's not going to last. Not the machlokas, but the people. And that's why what happens to Korach as soon as the machlokas becomes unresolvable, they clearly they've proven not to be l'shem shamayim, Korach gets sunk into the ground. And Korach is gone forever. Korach, his children, the whole thing, that's almost wiped off the face of the earth, so much so, right, that at the beginning, what's the first Rashi? We go through all Korach's lineage, and we go all the way up, and Yaakov says, no, stop over there, don't get to me, I don't want to be part of this lineage of Korach. We don't let Korach stay. And it's a beautiful idea, because Hillel and Shammai are the paradigm of what a machlokas l'shem shamayim is. We know, and we always paskin like Hillel, and yet, Shammai is very prevalent in the Gemara. You know, when I was a kid in school, I didn't understand why we're learning Gemara. I thought it was silly. I'm like, let's just learn Halacha of Eiter next. You know, what do we need to learn Gemara for? I'm learning Shammai's opinion. It's irrelevant. I felt at the time, again, as a young man, as a sixth grader, seventh grader, I felt confused with a back and a forth and a give and a take, and why do I gotta know? Let's just, you know, go to halacha class, tell me what to do, and shayin gadol finished. But yet, the ideas of Shammai, since they are l'shem shamayim, therefore they carry value. And since they carry value, because they were L'shem Shemayim, therefore it's going to last forever. It's going to be everlasting. It's going to be part of our lineage. It's going to be part of our tradition. It's not something that we ever going to get rid of, Shama. And this is fascinating because the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that what's the status of Hillel and Shammai? The status of Hillel and Shammai, that even though they used to be disputants with each other, what happens with Hillel and Shammai? They never stopped marrying each other. They were always committed to each other that, oh, we're going to stay together, right? Hillel and Shammai, the Gemara says, even though they used to dispute about what is a mamzer and what is a legal marriage versus an illegal marriage, yet Hillel and Shammai never hesitated each other from marrying each other. And you see that that's exactly what a machlokas l'shem shamayim is. I mean, they discussed and they went back and forth in theory, but l'maisa, it didn't affect their relationships with each other, that their relationships, and they stayed. Hillel didn't cut Shammai off. Hillel included Shammai in the broad tent. You know, people think of Shammai almost like an ogre sometimes. You know, when the ger comes and says, convert me, I'll regal achas. I spoke with this once before, maybe just a couple weeks ago. And Shammai says, get out of here. People think of him as an ogre. No, no, no. Shammai was not a Baal Machloket. Shammai was very interested in greeting people, but it had to be L'shem Shemayim. And he didn't feel that person was still L'shem Shemayim. V'harayah Hillel, who we disagree with all the time, there, they integrated. And this is very interesting. Because in marriage, there's no shaila that you're going to have machlokas l'shem shamayim, and that machlokas will last forever, if it's l'shem shamayim. John Gottman is the world expert, right, on marriage. Do you know there are two kinds of marital conflict, he writes. You have two different people. Either the conflict could be resolved, or they are perpetual, which means they're going to be part of our lives forever. If you break it down, what kind of machlokas is perpetual, percentage-wise? What percentage of machlokas are perpetual versus what are, you know, solvable, what he calls solvable problems? Perpetual is, what do you think the percentage of problems are perpetual? Take a guess. That will make you feel better about your marriage.
80?
Close. 69% of all arguments in marriage never get solved. The majority of marital conflicts fall into the category. 69%. Time and again, we do, you know, they do follow up. Some people, they're arguing about the same thing they were arguing about 4 years earlier. Right? They put on new clothing, but the same thing. He says, for example, one, you know, in the if you have a Catholic and a Jew who's married, this is in the second one, right? They're always going to argue whether the baby should be Catholic or Jewish. It never goes away. But here's where the key is. The recognition that the machlokas is there, but the way in which you have that machlokas. Despite their differences, these couples remain very satisfied with their marriage because they have hit upon a way to deal with their unbegrudgeable problem so it doesn't overwhelm them. They've learned to keep it in place and have a sense of humor about it. So to give an example, that this couple has an argument about whether they should go to their in-laws or not, right? That's, you know, something that nobody here could relate to. Should I go to my in-laws or should I stay home? And they have this debate. But eventually, the debate, there are two ways of having the debate. One is where they yell at each other. The other one is where they start to make a little bit of late thoughts about it. They joke around about it, sort of thing. Meaning, the recognition that machlokas is inevitable because two people look at it from a completely different way, but to understand that they're perpetual, right? So couples that intuitively understand that the problems are inevitable, part of a relationship, much the way chronic physical ailments are inevitable as you get older, those are couples that eventually survive. 69% of couples have this. And if you look at your own marriage, you'll say, oh, like, you know, one part of the couple, he likes order and Seder, and the other one, like, doesn't care about that. It's not a value to them. You're never really going to come to a happy medium in that. People are going, if you're going to just, but if you learn to joke around about it and be a little bit sensitive towards the other person about what they want, then that will sustain the marriage. So that's number one in this particular Mishnah. If it's a machlokas l'shem shemayim, which means that I have my shtick, you have your shtick, we understand it's perpetual, and yet I'm okay with it, that's going to be sofoliskayim. And what's going to be sofoliskayim in the end of the day? If it's beautifully with the Mishnah. But the marriage is going to be Mekayim. If it's a machlokas l'shem shamayim, so full is Kayim. and go with the Bar Tanur. That means what? What does the Bar Tanur say? If it's a machlokas l'shem shemayim, then what's going to happen? Sof l'skayim, who's going to be miskayim? The machlokas and the Bar Tanur chimes in and says the people are going to be miskayim, namely the husband and the wife. If they look at it l'shem shemayim, then they're going to be able to last. And what's going to happen? They're going to have a legacy. They're going to have children. They're going to have a beautiful family. You can have a machlokas, but it's got to be l'shem shemayim. It doesn't mean you never, ever disagree with the other party. So that's a machlokas l'shem shemayim. That's the Bar Tanura, and that fits in beautifully with what Gottman has to say. Perpetual problem, 69%. More people, they should broadcast that stat, because everybody thinks, like, oh, you know, we have an irreconcilable problem. I like red, she likes blue. Let's get over it. Just, you'll like red, she'll like blue, it's fine. That's okay. You don't have to agree. I say tomato, she says tomato, whatever it is. But that's okay, as long as you got l'shem shemayim, you're doing it for the right reasons. Self l'skayim, it's a marriage one. That's number one. But if you look at the Mishnah continues, right? Follow along. And to me, this is so striking. The first time I heard this from Rabbi Fran. He quoted, I don't remember if it was Rav Schwab or if it was Rav Shimshon Rav Elhirsch, but I don't think I ever saw it in writing. It says the Machlokas of Hillel versus Shammai. Now, how would you say, what's the next Machlokas that's not L'shem Shemayim? How would you describe it?
Korach and Moshe.
What does the Mishnah say? Korach V'Hadassah. It's an obvious... what's the word I'm looking for? It's not sequential. I guess not the word I'm looking for. It's not parallel. So why is it that the Mishnah is not parallel? Why does it say that there's Machlokas Hillel and Shammai is L'shem Shemayim and Machlokas Korach V'Hadassah? I'm sorry, the Machlokas Hillel Shammai is L'shem Shemayim, the Machlokas Korach V'Hadassah is not. What's the lack of connection between the two? I heard a beautiful answer, and it like really struck me and made me think very much about every Machlokas I've ever been in. Machlokas L'shem Shemayim has two sides. You show up, you present one opinion, they present another opinion, and then you figure out what the proper resolution is. Machlokas L'shem Shemayim is when you're just looking to win the argument. You know, we have something called the debate team. The whole goal of debate is not to debate. The whole goal of the debate team is to win the debate. But a real live debate is an intellectual exchange of ideas through which both parties grow. When it came to Hillel and Shammai, they weren't interested in winning. They were interested in getting to the emes. Emes and Shalom go together. They were interested in getting to the truth, to the kernel of truth as to what is the actual halacha of the matter. What was Korach interested in? Korach was interested in one thing and one thing only. Korach. You know, being right. Korach was interested in gaining something from the machlokas. Korach was interested in becoming the Kohen Gadol. I mean, the more mefarshim you look at, it depends on what Korach's angle was, but according to all the common denominator amongst all the machlokasim is that Korach was just interested in Korach's agenda. Korach could care less about what Moshe had. And if you look carefully, what's fascinating is that while Korach goes with Dathan ben Aviram, and Korach goes with the 250 men, and Korach goes with the other one, and Korach goes with all these people, each one of them had a different agenda. And within the dispute, there would have been many disputes. That's why Ohm ben Pelos' wife was able to keep him away. She's like, what are you doing joining Korach? Well, either way, what are you going to be subservient to Korach? You're going to be subservient to Moshe. So he's like, all right, might as well stay with Moshe. Wasn't the greatest argument, but you see that everybody had a different agenda. The common denominator between everybody on Korach's team was they were not L'shem Shemayim. They were just L'shem themselves. Hillel and Shammai were L'shem Shemayim. You see this in a beautiful, beautiful Gemara, one of my all-time favorite Gemaras. I've quoted this many times. If you heard me before, forgive me. But it's Rambam Metziyah Pei Dalet. You have one of the great couples of all time, Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was Mekarei of Rish Lakish. How was he Mekarei of Rish Lakish? Rish Lakish was a big-time crook. And Rabbi Yochanan apparently was a very beautiful, handsome man. Alright, the Gemara Brachas tells us that Rabbi Yochanan used to sit outside the mikvah when the women would go, so the first thing they would see would be him, so the children would be beautiful. So apparently Rabbi Yochanan was very beautiful. So Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan had a running thing going where Rabbi Yochanan would say to Rish Lakish, you're the most talented man in the world. You could jump over rivers, you could do all these things. Why don't you just come and learn Torah and you'll become the most talented man in the world in Torah learning? And Rish Lakish looked at Rabbi Yochanan and says, yeah, well you're the most beautiful man in the world and you're sitting there learning Torah. What are you wasting your time for? So Rabbi Yochanan was a smart guy, right? He doesn't convince Rish Lakish. he doesn't try to then attack Rish Lakish, but he tries to just bring him in. He says, oh yeah, you think I'm beautiful? You should see my sister. So Rabbi Yochanan says, let me see. He goes, oh, if you start learning. So Rish Lakish starts learning, and then he marries Rabbi Yochanan's sister, and Baruch Hashem, the two of them enjoy a beautiful marriage. And Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan become chavrusas. And that was a chavrusa, Rish Lakish versus Rabbi Yochanan. Unfortunately, what happens one time is they're discussing whether something is mekabel tumah or not, whether something is a metal object, I forget exactly what it was,
sword.
A sword, I think it was a small sword, it wasn't such a large sword, whether it was going to mekabel tumah or not. And Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, you should know you're a crook, right? You used to be a crook, you should know what the value of this thing is, whether it's mekabel tumah or not. Rish Lakish was so distraught when he heard Rabbi Yochanan say that. And Rabbi Yochanan saw that Rish Lakish said that, so got destroyed. He got destroyed. And then Rish Lakish saw that Rabbi Yochanan got destroyed. Rish Lakish passes away. Rabbi Yochanan is left without a chavrusa. So what happens? So Rabbi Yochanan is sitting and learning all day, and they bring in a rookie, right? They bring in a blazer bin to dust, who is, they bring in, you know, he's like a resident in the hospital, and they said, listen, you're in. This guy, you know, Rabbi Yochanan needs a chavrusa. It's time. Shiva was up. It's time to sit. Let's join him. So Rabbi Yochanan says something. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas brings 24 rayos as to why Rabbi Yochanan is correct. This happens again. Nachamol. And Rabbi Yochanan can't stand it anymore. He says, Hechad bar lakisha, Hechad bar lakisha. Right, the song. You know the song from Wax. Where is bar lakisha? Where is Reish Lakish? Where is the exalted Reish Lakish? I need Rish Lakish at a time like this. I know what I'm saying is correct, but I want to hear the counter opinion so that it could develop my own opinion, or I could see that if my opinion is wrong and I could get to the real evidence. I don't need somebody telling me 24 things why I'm right. And then Rabbi Yochanan, unfortunately, because he's in such anguish, he passes away. But you see something very, very powerful from this Gemara. What's going on in this Gemara? What's going on in this Gemara is that Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan wanted the other opinion. He's not scared of the other opinion. A machlokas, that's l'shem shemayim, means you're looking to see what the other person says so you can intellectually understand your opinion better and you can grow from it. Hillel and Shammai had that great dynamic where the two of them would go at it. Whenever you are in business, or you're in any form of leadership, a great way to enhance your leadership is not to hire a yes man, but rather to hire somebody who's totally different than you, who has a totally different perspective of you, and then through that, and then taking that other opinion seriously, and then developing your own. We might have done this morale before, but that's why man marries woman, as opposed to man marrying man. If a man marries man, it's the same thing over again. Right? That's what the Gemara is supposed to compare homosexual behavior to a bal gaiva. Why? And also compare somebody who marries a rayis, somebody who marries a close relative to that. Why? Because then you're not looking beyond yourself, you're only looking into yourself. A man to a man is the same opinion. But a man marrying a woman, you're looking at totally different things from a totally different perspective, from a totally different way, and then you're able to develop your idea much better. You're able to understand the world through a different prism, through a different lens. But that's only if you treat the other person like a person, and you're listening to see what they have to say. Hillel and Shammai were doing that. Korach wasn't. Korach didn't care what Moshe had to say. I saw a cute article, you know, like I always do before these things, I Google these things, and I say, what does the Velt have to say about it? So I saw that Neil Fleischman, who used to be a Rebbe in Frisch, he wrote an article many years ago, and on this point he was hammering home. He told over a maise that was such a telling maise. He says, he wanted to stay in Israel to learn more, and his parents wanted to come home after Shana Aleph. Can you imagine this stuff? Okay, it's like never happened before. So somebody asked him, where are you going? He goes, I'm going to fight my parents and to beat them. He says, and you already lost. You're going to have a discussion. Like everything else, you have to go to have a discussion to see what the other party is. You have to... Korach, nothing. Hillel and Shammai, there was something to talk about. Rish Lakish and Yochanan, there was always something to talk about. It was two litigants discussing something, growing together. The idea can't be more true than in any area of marriage. If you go there trying to, if you go to have a conversation, trying to get your point across, you've already lost before the battle, before the conversation has happened. every discussion has to be a discussion where you want to get to what the kernel of truth is. Yeah, you can come with your predisposition. You know, everybody knows that one time Shlomo Zalman Orbach had his wife, Levaya, famously said, "I have nothing to ask Mechila for." So there's one young man who was very frustrated. He went to his Rebbe, and he said to his Rebbe, you know, Shlomo Zalman Orbach said he didn't have to ask his wife Mechila for, but my wife and I, we fight from time to time. So the Rebbe says, "You don't think he ever disagreed with his wife?" Of course he disagreed with his wife. You're allowed to disagree, but not. Disagreement is healthy, because that means otherwise you're not bringing your opinion to the table. But you have to disagree in a holy, in a respectful way. At the same time, and as Gottman writes in that old book, you have to be willing to accept influence from the other party. If you're not willing to accept influence from the other party, then you're toast before it starts. This is why it says, it's got to be the opinion of Korach Ladasa, because Korach was not willing to accept any influence, and that's why Korach eventually was not going to be Miskayim as the Baratzin Arisut. It's funny, I always talk about my favorite show growing up, or whatever, not show, radio show, with Mike and the Mad Dog. It was such a gewaldige thing that the two of them would go back and forth and we got to listen and laugh. And when they split up, it lost the time. It never has the same, each one saying, then they're just talking about Bali Diver, they're talking about their own opinion. But when they each went back and forth, it was something that we could grow from. It was so exciting to hear. But after that, it was like, ah, come on, it's boring. So that's point opinion number two. Approach number two in this mission. First approach we discussed was this idea of Sofa L'Skayim, that it's everlasting because it's got this idea that you're L'Shem Shemayim and therefore it's Sofa L'Skayim. The people are always going to be L'Skayim, the relationships are going to be L'Skayim, etc. Approach number two of this is that you have to be willing to accept the sphere of influence from the other party. And the third little hara, this is so important for a relationship. It's very interesting that it says Korach v'Adasa. It could have said, what's the machlokas shal Hashem Shemayim? Zu machlokas shal Korach. What is Korach v'Adasa? You want to know the number one way that somebody is not L'Shem Shemayim? When he tries to rabble-rouse the troops. If you are L'Shem Shemayim, you don't really care what other people have to say. Because if you're wrong, you're wrong. And if you're right, you're right. And that's it. But Korach, the biggest proof that he wasn't L'Shem Shemayim was that he was always a rabble-rouser. He was gathering up the troops to try to get his point across. Because Korach wasn't interested in anything real. Korach was interested in Korach himself. And therefore, there had to be the Adasso and the henchmen that came with him. Because anybody that's not L'Shem Shemayim is always gathering up the troops. I would love to tell a story, but why not? No, I can't. There was a need. So a machlokas that L'Shem Shemayim, the way you could identify with yourself, if you're really arguing for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is if A, you're not really interested in winning, B, you're interested in being, you don't care if it lasts, and C, if you don't get anybody else involved. If you don't get anybody else involved, then you just, for example, if you have a machlokas with your wife, it's a disagreement. It's your own personal discussion. You don't have to go rabble-rouse and get in-laws involved and parents involved and brothers. Because once that happens, there's almost no going back. Once it leaves the Dalet Amos, then it's very, very hard to undo any machlokas, if anybody does. Like, you know, the machlokas, people have disagreements. That's okay. But if it's between you and your spouse, if it's between you and your friend, you know, like in school, you know, how do you know my father's not L'Shem Shemayim? This is on mundane stuff, but like, the number one argument that high school kids have with you, I work with, is like, who's a better fantasy quarterback, you know, right? So, but nobody ever could just have a disagreement. They're like, yeah, John, what are you doing? You know, they're always calling, they only care about winning the argument. They don't really care about who's the better quarterback. It's a dumb argument. So in your own lives, you have to know that this is, you have to go into it about focus. Okay, you're allowed to disagree, but the disagreement is going to be between me and you, and I'm just trying to determine what the truth is. So, tonight, this little lesson from Korach. Sofa L'Skayim. It's going to last. You're going to have arguments that are going to last forever. That's okay. But there's a way to do it. There's a change of mind. B, you always have to look what the other party has to say. And C, whatever happens has to stay between the two parties and not go beyond that. Okay.